This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Filmmaker Sam Fuller broke the mold for war films in the 1950s. He gave his characters room to question the design of war and their role in it. And he also raised conversations about social equality on and off the battlefield. NC State film professor Marcia Gordon has published a new book on Fuller's work. It is called Film is Like a Battleground, Sam Fuller's War Movies, and it explores his legacy. Marcia hosts a screening of the film, The Steel Helmet, and a talk about Fuller's work Wednesday, February 15th, NC State's James B. Hunt Jr. Auditorium. Marcia Gordon, she of Movies on the Radio, here to talk about her book. Congratulations and welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So tell us about your interest in Sam Fuller. I mean, you're a film professor, so you've heard of him.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's funny. When I went to graduate school at the University of Maryland, one of my first classes as a master's student was with Robert Kolker, and he taught a class on 1950s American film, and he showed a film called Pickup on South Street. And I loved this film, and I thought, who is this guy who made this film? This is different from anything I'd ever seen before. So I did a presentation on him, and all these years later, I just kind of kept coming back to Fuller. The more I learned, the more interesting I found him, and so finally I said, you know, I'm just going to write a book.
So who is he? Sam Fuller.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
So Fuller is a really, really interesting character. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1997, so I never got a chance to meet him. I was discovering his films at the time he passed away, but he was raised in New York City, worked as a journalist, so he had this kind of background in investigative reporting, and fought in World War II, and after the war moved to Hollywood, and he had already been selling some material to Hollywood before the war, and started making films in the late 1940s independently. So this was a little unusual at the time. This is kind of the birth of independent filmmaking at a time when the studio system was collapsing pretty much. And so Fuller started making these films and had some wonderful successes that allowed him to do work both inside the studio system and outside of it for many years.
What are the distinguishing features in his film that distinguish him as an outsider?
Yeah. Well, so there's a number of things. One is, I mean, Fuller very deliberately did not like to play by the rules in terms of storytelling, in terms of character. If you expect a character to live, he would kill the character, you know. So, and you know, he broke a lot of rules that that other filmmakers feared that they, you know, there would be audience repercussions if they would have broken them. Stylistically, he did a lot of really jarring kind of rapid dollies into close-ups and extreme close-ups where faces fill the whole screen. And these weren't just like in the golden age of Hollywood, maybe Marlene Dietrich or somebody would get this erotic kind of big close-up. Fuller didn't use it for those reasons. He liked you to see the kind of grit in someone's face, and he liked to shock his audience a little bit. So he had a kind of agitational quality to both his form, to his style, and also to his content as well. And so he made a lot of films that really tried to kind of push buttons in his audience.
And this would be difficult for us to fully take on, but in the 1950s, as you suggest, the close-up was really the glamour shot, as you just said. And so when you do it in a war movie, where you're going to show somebody's face either chomping a cigar or bleeding from the mouth, that was not the way America wanted to see war.
Absolutely. So like The Steel Helmet, which is the film we're showing on Wednesday, Gene Evans in his first starring role as Sergeant Zack is this gritty, sweaty, unheroic, not particularly sympathetic main character of the film. Now, first off, you don't do that in a war movie, right? You have heroes and you have, you know, people who are going to represent, you know, kind of the best and brightest of the American military. So to have an anti-hero as your main figure, number one. Number two, to do extreme close-ups where his sweaty bearded face is filling the screen is really jarring. I mean, people just didn't use close-ups that way.
And the look at soldiers' lives, individual lives, so it's not just going to be a battlefield with one heroic, glamorous commander, but a rather anti-heroic NCO.
Right.
And the stories of the individuals in his unit who are then all going to play out in the bigger theater of war. Here's a clip from the film, The Steel Helmet.
What do you do to make your living in the Army?
I'm the radio operator.
Yeah? What are you gonna do? Clobber the Reds with those bottles?
Well, they didn't have the right change at the PX back at Poussin. So I took it out in hair tonic.
Oh, one of those kind of guys, huh? Let's see what kind of permanence you got. Who scalped you?
I lost all my hair when I was a kid.
Yeah, how?
Scarlet fever.
That's a clip from Sam Fuller's 1951 film, The Steel Helmet. I'm talking with NC State film professor Marcia Gordon, who wrote a book about Fuller's work. Tell us more about that film.
Yeah, so this is such an interesting film. First off, Fuller's sympathies were with the infantrymen, with the dog faces, as he liked to call them, that were out there in the trenches slogging every day. There's no glamour. It's filthy, dirty, sad, hard work. And so what he liked to do in a film like The Steel Helmet is to really display kind of the relationships between these soldiers and what they did to survive. This is not a film. This is the first film that came out from Hollywood about the Korean War, which was actually a conflict. But it's not about some grand objectives, and it's not about how we're going to save the world and make America a safer place, and it's not about democracy. It's about these individuals who are trying to survive and who have their own neuroses and their own anxieties and their own losses. And in this case, you heard primarily the voice of Gene Evans, Sergeant Zach, who's a World War II veteran, has already fought this, you know, very justifiable war. And now he's in Korea and he's just trying to get through it. He wants to live through it. This is not the same kind of war as the last war. And so that's something Fuller often explored.
Say it's not about democracy, not about the geopolitical democratic struggle between, you know, communism and capitalism. But there was a great question about democracy, and that was the threat to democracy within the United States. Race was an important played a part in this movie.
Yeah, so one of the most significant and controversial things about this film is that Fuller had an African-American soldier and a Japanese-American soldier in this film. And they get a prisoner of war, a communist prisoner of war, and the prisoner of war starts asking them questions, like on the side, about, so why are you fighting for a country when you don't have equal rights at home? You know, weren't your parents interned, you know, during World War II to the Japanese-American soldier? And you can't even sit on the, you know, the bus next to these people, to the African-American soldier. And you get to hear the soldiers' very reasoned, interesting responses about their optimism for the future. But it's also acknowledging that America is not a perfect place and has things to work on. And this was, at the time, a total flag for people who were looking for communist influence in Hollywood and who were anxious that race was one of the things that communists were using to undermine the sense of America as this kind of ideal democracy. So Fuller really takes that on and I think very bravely at least raises the question.
And it was a question that got him in trouble. The FBI ends up looking into his work.
Absolutely. So when this film came out, Steel Helmet was made for $200,000, which was nothing. And in the first 6 months, it had already brought in $1 million. This was a huge hit relative to what went into it. And so, A, it garnered a lot of attention for that reason. But B, you have, on the one hand, the communist press looking at this saying, this is a warmongering film. And then you have the kind of conservative American institutions saying, wait a second, there's communist ideology in this film. So nobody can figure out what's going on with Fuller, but there's all of these columns that start appearing. The FBI takes up an investigation into Fuller's politics. The Department of the Defense and the Army get involved. And so a lot of what this book comes out of is all of this archival research I did at the National Archives and Library of Congress and Academy of Motion Pictures, looking through and reading all of this hand-wringing from all of these parties about, is this filmmaker who also wrote and produced a lot of his films, so he was really had a lot of control over them, is he trying to kind of subvert anything about American
ideology? Well, and of course, the subtext in all of this is the amount of pressure on particularly the those who were less independent and the kind of censorship that was actually in play in the United States of America in our film industry.
Well, I think one of the things I learned writing this book, which I can honestly say I did not know before, was just how thorny it was to make a film, especially about a contemporary conflict. So you had to go, of course, to the American military and the Department of Defense in order to get, for example, stock footage or to get permission to use a tank in a scene or something like that. So that means they had to look at a script and say, okay, this is good for America. So if your script didn't appease the people who were reading, you know, into it, whatever, then you didn't get the footage, right? So that's just one. And then there's the Production Code Administration within Hollywood looking at films to make sure there was nothing subversive or offensive in them. You know, then you have the studios. And what do the studios care about? Making money and not pissing people off. You don't want to piss people off in America or anywhere else. You certainly don't want to, you know, make people feel like they're being alienated by a film. And so I think one of the things that I found extraordinary is that Fuller, you know, makes this film, The Steel Helmet. It's so controversial. He follows it up, 1951, same year, with another Korean War film. So that he really kind of stuck to his guns, and he felt these were important stories to tell, and they were worth fighting to make.
And the Golden Gate, that takes a look at conflict in Indochina.
Yeah, China Gate. So China that's Gate, a slightly China Gate, yeah. later film. I love this film. It's so bizarre and fantastic. This is Nat King Cole. This is Angie Dickinson in one of her first big roles. And it is also a film that's very interested in race, but it's also, you know, dealing with the question of communism and with fight. In this case, it's the French Legionnaires who are fighting, but these Americans are there fighting on their behalf. And it's an intriguing, strange, and wonderful film. And it includes like a great on-screen song that Nat King Cole sings in the middle of a scene.
Well, and again, somebody taking on the conflict in Indochina and understanding that it's important. And I don't think that it was to most Americans, particularly when it was the French problem.
Right.
Right. And but he saw some of the tensions. And again, it sort of comes out as this kind of pro-American, optimistic,
right.
you know, American ideals will prevail. But he does raise questions about who the good guys are and where the corruption might be.
Yeah. And, you know, but the other thing that I find interesting is there's like that big political level. But then it always boils down in a Fuller film to the individual. And, you know, one of the things that Fuller liked to ponder is, you know, one day you're fighting a war, then a truce is called, and your enemy all of a sudden, you know, might end up being your ally. And that line between war and peace, and he referred to war as organized insanity. And I think that is a brilliant articulation. You are trying to order and make rational what is crazy, which is killing other people, right? And so doing it on behalf of a nation. So for in something like The Steel Helmet, the way that this gets played out is there's a young orphan who's called Short Round in the film. This is where Steven Spielberg gets the name for his character from Indiana Jones. Short Round is this orphan who, like, just follows around Sergeant Zack, this hardened sergeant. And as soon as the sergeant starts feeling anything for him, you know it's a compromise because he has to be steeled in order to survive. I mean, you just can't be human and be a soldier at the same time. It's too hard.
And talking about Indiana Jones, I think some of the costumes from Indiana Jones came from China Gate, if I'm not mistaken, if you take a look at
the Fast
the American,
Track. Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the, well, tell us about now. There are sort of lots of films. Let's talk about the film The Pickup.
Okay, Pickup on South Street. So this book is focused on war films, but I also consider the Cold War as part of that because Fuller, obviously there's hot Cold Wars like Korea being the first one, but this is a Cold War noir film. And the scene you're about to hear is Richard Widmark, who plays Skip. He's this unrepentant pickpocket and he happens to pick this woman's pocket. He thinks he's getting money, but instead he gets microfilm that's being delivered to a communist agent. And so he's being interrogated by the police and the FBI, and they're trying to appeal to his patriotic values.
Go ahead, fan me. Come on, give me the word.
That film you stole had government information on it, classified. We've been following this girl for months, and just as we were about to grab a top red agent receiving the film from her, you broke up the ball game. Now, can't you see how important this is? We just want your cooperation, and the charges against you will be dropped. Isn't that right, Captain?
You know, I like to make this rap stick, but what he's got to do is more important.
Well, you boys are talking in the wrong corner. I'm just a guy keeping my hands in my own pockets.
If you refuse to cooperate, you'll be as guilty as the traitors that gave Stalin the A-bomb.
Are you waving the flag at me?
I know something in our side you should give.
And I know you pinched me three times, got me convicted three times, and made me a three-time loser. And I know you took an oath to put me away for life. Well, you're trying awful hard with all this patriotic eyewash, but get this. I didn't grift that film, and you can't prove I did.
That's a clip from Sam Fuller's film Pickup on South Street. It was set during the Cold War, and Marcia Gordon is here talking about her book about Fuller's War.
So after both the Steel Helmet and Fixed Bayonets and all of the scrutinizing of Fuller, I find it so interesting that he makes this Cold War noir film in which the main character is this relentless individualist and actually a kind of a rabid capitalist. All he cares about is money and getting more of it. And the idea that the police find so galling that he would not give up information for the sake of country, right? It raised, of course, all of these flags. As you can imagine, he's already being scrutinized, and then he makes this film. And what people do, and it's such an interesting and kind of naive approach, is, well, if that character isn't patriotic, the director must not be patriotic. Mm-hmm. So there's all of these memos that are in, again, the Department of Defense and in the FBI files that are, like, associating Fuller with his protagonist. And, you know, it's the most ridiculous notion, right, that you are just your character. But that's, again, what happens. And this is absolutely one of my, I would say, maybe my favorite Fuller film. So if you're in the market for a Fuller film and haven't seen one, Pickup is a great one.
I'm talking to Marcia Gordon about her new book, Film is Like a Battleground, Sam Fuller's War Movies. And I'm doing that on the state of things. What about that? But again, that film, it asks all of these questions like, well, right, is it all about the money? And the police are perhaps looking a little noble and virtuous here. But clearly they have been badgering this guy and harassing him. So
yeah,
there's also how police power can turn a suspect, et cetera.
Well, and in the case of Pickup on South Street, what I find really interesting is that both the police and the FBI are completely ineffectual. I mean, it's the underground figures, Skip and then Moe, played by Thelma Ritter in an Academy Award nominated role, who are basically, they have all the knowledge they have, and they will only share it with you for a price. So in other words, just saying, look, this is for country, it doesn't cut it for them. And so the opening scene of this film, I think, is a great Fuller refutation of the FBI's powers, because it's a pickpocket scene where the FBI is surveilling him while he takes this microfilm out of someone's pocket and he gets away. And so I think that's a kind of audacious, like, good luck, my friends, you know, like, you're not doing your job all that well. And so this is, I think, one of the things that Fuller liked to do is he liked to shake things up. I mean, that was his kind of character. I never got to meet him, but the stories I hear, including from his wife and from his daughter, who I've gotten to know over the years because of the research I've done in Fuller's personal papers, he was such a charismatic storyteller, and he liked to stir things up. And I do think that part of this was kind of shaking up, you know, people's kind of prevailing ideas about law and order and right and wrong and commanding and following. And that he took a great pleasure in doing that.
So what's his legacy then? Was he always the outsider, or does he have an impact today?
Well, no, I think he certainly has an impact today. I mean, in some ways, Fuller, you know, who's not as well known as, you know, Hitchcock or Ford or Wilder, I mean, he's a filmmaker's filmmaker in some way. So among the people who admire him greatly and who cast him in films were people like Spielberg or Jean-Luc Godard, Wim Wenders, Jim Jarmusch, so Quentin Tarantino. So he, I think, has a direct influence in this kind of sensationalistic and yet really probing and important kind of question asker. And I think that that is a kind of very unusual position to have been in the late 1940s and in the 1950s. And the fact that he kind of stuck with this course, his probably best known film is The Big Red One, which came out in 1980 with Lee Marvin. This is his first Infantry Division World War II story that he had been trying to make since the 1940s. And so the way that that film, again, looks at the kind of pain of daily soldiering, I think that that's still felt today in war films.
Marcia Gordon, film professor at NC State, co-star of Movies on the Radio, now has her own book called Film is Like a Battleground, Sam Fuller's War Movie. She hosts a screening and a talk about Fuller's film, The Steel Helmet, Wednesday, February 15th at NC State's Hunt Auditorium. We've got the information at our website. Marcia, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
The music of the Pinkerton Raid coming up. Stay tuned.